Our first speaker for this morning has been involved in a number of very prominent open source projects, including Debian, Ubuntu, the One Laptop per Child project. And when I heard that he had joined the FSF board of directors, it gave me new hope for the direction of the FSF. So he's a senior researcher at the MIT Sloan School of Management. Please welcome Benjamin Mako Hill.
Thank you. All right. Okay, so can we? That's a little embarrassing. Let's try to see if we can. That much better. There's a kernel. All right. Okay. All right, everybody. So I'm Benjamin Mako Hill. I'm from MIT and from the Free Software Foundation, and I'm here to talk a little bit about something that's fun and that I've been playing around with for a little bit, which is errors, in particular sort of errors in software and in technology, and how we can use them to advocate for free and open source software. So I'll prefix this talk by saying that I'm one of those, you know, at the Free Software Foundation, and one of those, perhaps, in this context, slightly annoying people who likes to say free software because I like to talk about freedom and I like to talk about user freedom. But but I'm also one of those people who think that some of our divisions to date have been, in some cases, silly and unproductive, and I think that we have a lot in common that we don't talk about as often. So with that said, I think that one of the most important things that we, obviously the most important thing that we have in common is, of course, a common definition. And our definition is one that focuses on users and on sort of, we can talk about freedom for users, or some people talk about freedoms for users, some people talk just about sort of rights or abilities or things that users should be able to do because it allows them to do certain things. And those things are common, of course. It's unrestricted use, it's study, it's modification, it's distribution, copying, right, it's collaboration. And what's important, I think, to point out is that when we talk about these things, whether we're talking about it in the free software camp or in the open source software or in the open source camp, we're talking about creating sort of aspects of software which empower users to do these things, right? But I think that our sort of dark and very poorly kept secret is that while we're here doing this because we want to allow users of software to have these freedoms or abilities, we've done for the most part a pretty poor job of actually communicating this to users, or at least to most users. Our organizations, whether it's the Free Software Foundation or whether it's the OSI or whether it's Software in the Public Interest or whether it's even organizations that are more tangentially related like the Electronic Frontier Foundation, are for the most part supported by, if they're membership organizations, they have members who are technologists, almost all technologists. And this is a problem for a set of reasons. One reason is that there's a lot more users than developers. And that's something that I've been thinking a lot about, so about why this sort of happens. So I think that our message is one that focuses on user empowerment, right? Either for principal reasons or for because it's just sort of good business sense and results in software that does what we want. And this sort of boils down to an issue of control over technology, right? So to understand this message, if we're talking about control over technology, right, it's first, and why that's a good thing, you need to first understand that technology is powerful, that technology is something that has a sort of whole sets of different powers. Now, developers of technology have a huge amount of power when they create a technology. They can make a technology do certain things, they have to make the technology do certain things and not do other things. And that has that gives them a profound amount of control over users. Now, we as technologists, right, know that. We know that because we have that power and we exercise it every time we build technology. But most users don't understand that because they don't understand the technology as well. But in my efforts to sort of educate people about power and technology, something that I've certainly done at the FSF, I've sort of run into what's maybe a more fundamental problem, which is that most users, or at least many users, don't understand that technology exists. Now that may sound a little bit weird, so I think it needs a little more defense. So I'll sort of go to this quote by Mark Wiesner, who was director of computer science at Xerox PARC for a long time. He said, "A good tool is an invisible tool. By invisible, I mean a tool that does not intrude on your consciousness. You focus on the task, not the tool. Eyeglasses are a good tool. You look at the world, not the eyeglasses." So this is the reality of most technology. I can't count how many times I've went to people and said, so I work on this operating system. It's free software. It's open source. And people are like, what's an operating system, right? Oh, it's kind of like Windows, so you have to have that conversation, right? It's really hard to advocate for free firmware to people who don't know what firmware is. And the reality of the situation is that that's almost everyone, right? So the good news is that while most technology is invisible when it works, that technology doesn't always work, right? A pair of glasses with a smudge on them, or a crack, God forbid, right, becomes pretty visible. It's thrust pretty quickly into view, and so errors, as I'm trying to talk about them, are sort of like the tip of the iceberg, right? They're opportunities that can help lay groundwork for us to talk about technology, right? And to talk about it in ways that can be communicated to more people. So I'll move on to my next slide, which is the sort of broken eyeglasses of bank operating systems, right? So here's an ATM with a blue screen of death. They're all over the place. Let's see if that's not clear. Here's another one that says, this copy of Windows must be activated before you can log in. Do you want to activate Windows now? And then here's one, in case that's still ambiguous, here's one that actually says Windows 2000 shows it booting up. So who here's seen one of these, like a crashed ATM? Like a lot of people. Who here took a picture? Still quite a lot of people. So if you go to Flickr, right, it's not just people at OSCON who take these pictures. If you go to Flickr, if you go to one of these image sharing sites, you can find hundreds of pictures of people taking, of people sort of seeing their poor ATMs in vulnerable positions and deciding to document it for posterity, right? And if you look at the comments and things that people are saying, it's exactly the type of thinking that I think that we're interested in prompting, right? Power over technology. People say, holy crap, my ATM runs Windows. I trust this thing with my money, right? They say, people say, I have Windows. I mean, and the reason this is shocking is not because they're open source people. It's not because they're free software people. It's because they run Windows at home, and they've in all likelihood lost data to it, right? They're saying, I'm trusting this thing with my money. And people do exactly this. Now my point here is not that ATMs shouldn't run Windows. It's not that that's the right conclusion. The point is it's the right type of thinking. Because, you know, that ATM was always running an operating system, right? It has to run an operating system. And in many cases, it's always been Windows. But no one ever bothered to think about it until they saw the error. The choice of an operating system that controls the machine that controls your money is an important question. It's something we should think about. But it's not something we do because the technology sort of works. It's a machine you put a card in, money comes out. So that's sort of the basic idea of what I'm trying to do. Here's one more nice one here. This one says, welcome to the found new hardware wizard. So someone when they installed their card skimmer forgot to install the driver for it, apparently. So that's right, it's a devolved machine as well. So that's sort of the basic idea here. I'll give two more sort of concrete examples in my remaining minutes. The first is a short video by a sketch comedy group called Armstrong and Miller. So this one sort of speaks for itself.
Ah, Vivian. I've been wondering about some of the four-letter words we offer.
Have you indeed?
For example, if I type in, I get shiv.
Ah, yes, shiv. Is that a word people use?
Of course, shiv. An improvised knife-like weapon, as in, I dispatched the blackguard with my shiv. Right, then the second choice we offer is pigged. As in the abbreviation for the gene phosphatidylinositol-glycan class T. And those, I believe, are all the suggestions we offer. What about shit? I beg your pardon? It's a slang word for feces, and by extension, anything or anyone of poor quality.
Yes, I know the term only too well. Gilbert, are you seriously suggesting that the sort of people who compose predictive text messages on their mobile phones would ever use a word like shit?
It's just, I was talking to the milkman this morning, and he said it's in quite common usage. So when someone types this, isn't it more likely they're trying to write shit than shiv or pigged?
Our job, Gilbert, is to offer people not the words they do use, but the words that they should use.
So you always say.
Which is why when someone types in, we offer them coal or amble. Whereas we do not offer them cock.
Or anal.
Look,
Or anal. So, all right. So that's a great that's a great example of this sort of predictive text systems T9. There's a whole variety of these things that work in different ways. And what that shows is a set of affordances and constraints, right? Every technology that we build can do is better at producing certain messages than it is others. It's easier to write, for example, one of these systems, full words. So when people are writing with T9 systems, they're more likely to replace the word me with of, something you'd never do on a QWERTY keyboard, or rarely do on a normal sort of text input system, but they're willing to do it in these ways. All technology has constraints. All technology makes it easier to produce certain messages than others. So I'll show another screenshot. This is from, it says, homosexual eases into the 100 final at Olympic trials. This is actually about, the next line says, Tyson homosexual, easily won his semifinal. So this is, of course, not someone named Tyson homosexual. It's someone named Tyson gay, right? Perfectly normal last name. So this is an excellent, so this is from a website called One News Now, which is a news website run by the American Family Association. It's a conservative Christian organization. And one of the things they do on their website is they publish an AP news feed. And one of the things they do when they publish the AP news feed is they run a set of regular expressions across it, which replace words, certain words, with words they like, words they think are more appropriate. So the American Family Association thinks that the term homosexual is preferable to the term gay, because the term homosexual sounds more clinical and sounds more pathological, right? They've got a set of values about word choice, right? Don't know anything about organizations who do that. And they spend a huge amount of time and effort to change the message. Now, what's interesting is that they've been doing this since their website launched, right? They've been changing every instance of gay to homosexual all over the place, but no one noticed because it worked, right? This is a great example of a hidden intermediary. It's a system that's running between and changing the messages, right? Now, and yet no one knows that it exists because it works. It's only when it breaks that it becomes obvious, and it sure becomes obvious. Here's a whole page of things about homosexuals winning major races. Now what's important about these two examples here, both of the two examples, is something that I think actually really drives home the point of sort of free and open source software and why it's so important, which is that both of these examples are not just showing, in the first case, affordances and constraints, and in the second case, sort of hidden intermediaries. They're actually showing the values of the people that create them, right? People who define text messaging systems don't want to be the person to put shit in the dictionary, right? People who produce spell checkers don't want to be the want you to have to add swear words to the personal dictionary. I take personal credit for saying shit, right? So it's the values that actually become visible. Now, every technology designer has values, right? We know that because we're technology designers and we have values. And when we design technologies, our values go into them, right? Our technologies do things that we want them to do. Now, the whole message of free software and of open source is that software is better and users are more free, I guess in the other order, when users have control over that, when users' values are the ones that get to be reflected in the technology they create. My little thing here is just to say that I think that errors are one way that we can communicate more effectively to our users. We're used to talking about how our software sort of works better, faster, and more efficiently, and I think that maybe we could be well served by talking about the way that software doesn't work. And we can help communicate what I think is the most important message to the group of people who are, at the end of the day, most important and who, for the most part, we've done a pretty poor job of reaching. So, with that said, I'll just encourage people to check out the Revealing Errors blog and to send in errors when you see them. Thank you, everyone, for listening to me. All right.